It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and thank you for joining me. Got a lot to talk about this morning. Fresh on a number of people's minds is the fact that the dove season opened in Illinois and all around the country. And once again, while there are areas that had very good dove hunting, there are a lot of areas, traditional areas, that did not. And it continues to bring into the question, do we have as many doves as we used to? And given the enormous decline in songbird populations or bird populations that has been projected by not only the Cornell Lab, over 3 billion fewer birds over the last 50 years, but in more recent time, not only anecdotal observations, but also scientific, I think we have to say, no, we don't have as many mourning doves as we used to. We certainly have this new species in many parts of the country called Eurasian doves, which are taking over lots of areas of the country. But the mourning dove in Illinois and in the Midwest just doesn't seem to be doing as well as it did. It doesn't mean that their populations have declined significantly. I don't think they have, and I don't think we're hearing that. But there is a general decline taking place. And many areas in the state that traditionally have been really great areas, public hunting areas in particular, great areas for dove hunting, just aren't any good. And they haven't been any good for several years running. And here in northeastern Illinois, where we've generally had strong dove populations for a long time, we still do. They aren't quite as strong. So I, having done this for a long time and knowing a lot of people who hunt doves, not only in Illinois, but all around the country, mourning doves, that is, I think the general perspective is populations are down. They continue to go down. They're not alarmingly down, but there just are fewer doves. And we've seen this trajectory now over a number of years. And could it be poor breeding conditions? Unlikely, because it's now gone on for several years. We've had all kinds of breeding conditions here in Illinois. Is it tied to pesticides? Perhaps. We don't know. But overall, I think it is fair to say we don't have as many mourning doves as we used to. Moving from doves, I do want to spend a bit of this show this morning talking about something that we've talked about in the past, but not in a while, and it might get a little technical, so bear with me. And it has to do with how welcoming Canada is going to be to American hunters, and perhaps over time, even anglers. Certainly, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Alberta, Quebec, and Ontario have been a playground for people from the United States to go to for a long time, to hunt waterfowl, upland birds, fish, even to some extent big game hunting, although it's very restricted. And certainly the United States government in the world of waterfowl and wetlands protection has spent billions and billions of dollars trying to save the Canadian prairies from the plow and from trying to save waterfowl and wetland-dependent birds from declining further. A little bit over a year ago, Manitoba initiated very restrictive regulations on non-resident waterfowl hunters. A lottery system was put in place. A limit on the amount of time you could stay was put in place. The upland license was broken off from the waterfowl license, effectively doubling the cost of buying a Manitoba hunting license if you were going to Manitoba. And most people who go to Manitoba hunt waterfowl and hunt upland birds. So now you were talking about a license that could approach $400 to go to Manitoba, whether it's for 2 days. You couldn't stay longer than a week. So Manitoba kicked it off. Well, now Saskatchewan is having discussions similar to Manitoba. Only unlike Manitoba, Saskatchewan is involving all the stakeholders in trying to figure out what the best way to reduce the lack of availability, lack of access to hunting lands that's occurring. Manitoba, as you may recall, did this all behind the under the cover of darkness. They didn't involve anyone in the process at all. It was done more by edict. than anything else. And a lot of people were upset, and justifiably so. And that has led to a decline in the number of non-resident hunters going to Manitoba, which is by, I guess, by design in part. But on the other hand, a lot of those hunters have gone to Saskatchewan. What does that mean? So Saskatchewan now is looking at trying to restrict the number of days or potentially even the number of hunters that can come to Saskatchewan to hunt waterfowl. So you dig into this a little bit, and first of all, they're to be congratulated for involving stakeholders from across the spectrum, and that includes funders of conservation and wetlands conservation in Saskatchewan. It includes conservation groups. It includes hunters. It includes outfitters. But at the end of the day, what's happened in Saskatchewan happened in Manitoba and happened in Alberta, and that is outfitters leasing lands huge rates of volume, therefore denying access to people who aren't using outfitters. That is the underlying issue. So in Saskatchewan, it's believed that there are less than 100 outfitters operating as waterfowl, licensed waterfowl outfitters. But more than half of those 100 are United States outfitters who have a license to operate in Saskatchewan. Only 10% of the people who bought a license in Saskatchewan, a non-resident license last year, stayed for more than 1 week. There were 5,000 non-resident licenses sold. This compares with Manitoba, which is about 3,000 and declining. So 5,000 non-resident licenses were sold in Saskatchewan, and that could be to Canadians or to Americans. But out of those 5,000, only 10% stayed more than a week, 500 people. Stayed more than a week. Those 500 people are almost all outfitters and their guides who are tying up all the land. So as Saskatchewan looks at having a one-week restriction on hunting licenses, you'll be able to buy multiple licenses, but you can only hunt for a week. They really aren't addressing the problem at all because people don't stay more than a week, except for 10% who are all in the outfitting business. The only way in Saskatchewan or Manitoba, less extent in Alberta, but in those two states, provinces in particular, that they're going to solve this problem of access to land is restricting the outfitters or restricting the amount of land that outfitters can lease. And cash payments for leasing land remains illegal, but it happens all the time. Or an outfitter will help someone build a barn, or they'll deliver them pies or whatever means they want to tie up the land. But outfitters across Saskatchewan, and one of the biggest outfitters is a U.S. operation called Habitat Flats, which is leased, nobody even knows how much land they've leased in Saskatchewan. All of their clients, almost all their clients are Americans. Their guides are Americans. They are Americans, and they're operating legally. So Saskatchewan, as has Manitoba, set up a practice which enabled outfitters to outfit. There was no restriction on the amount of land they could tie up. And so you show up in Saskatchewan as a non-resident, or you're a Saskatchewan resident and you want to go hunting, and you find out that everything's leased. That's the fact of the matter. It's not that there are too many hunters coming to Saskatchewan or Manitoba from America. It's that too much land is being leased by the outfitters, and the outfitting business is showing no signs of declining, particularly as the ability of people to freelance is now severely restricted because Saskatchewan has a new law that says you must have landowner permission to hunt in Saskatchewan unless you must have a landowner's permission to hunt in Saskatchewan. That was not the case before. If it was fenced or had cattle on it, you couldn't hunt. Otherwise, it was considered open country unless it was posted. Now, nothing has to be posted. You have to have the landowner's permission. For those of you who traveled to Saskatchewan or Manitoba or Alberta, you can put a lot of miles under the road underneath your car before you find a house which has a landowner in it. And even then, it might even not be the landowner whose land you're trying to hunt. So freelancing now is really only possible on public lands. Outfitters are tying up the private lands. Therefore, there's less opportunity. I don't blame anybody who lives in Saskatchewan for being upset by this, who wants to go hunting and saying Americans and illegal outfitters are tying up all the land. But there's really no indication that illegal outfitters are tying up the land. And there's no indication that restricting licenses to 1 week is going to do anything to restrict the amount of land being leased by outfitters. The issue is with the outfitters, both those who are in Canada and those from America who operate legally in Canada. It's true in Manitoba. It's true in Saskatchewan. And so the attempts to restrict Americans from coming is frankly working on the wrong end of the horse. It's the outfitters and the amount of land that they lease and the length of time they tie it up that's creating these issues. That's my view, and that's also the view of a lot of other individuals. I want to be back in a moment. I'm going to talk about one other thing to do with waterfowl, and then I'll move on. You're listening to Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. I hope you're enjoying the show. I'm going to stick with the subject of waterfowl for just a moment. The Fish and Wildlife Service for next year, not this year, but for next year, is proposing that the limit on pintail ducks goes from one duck to three ducks. And many of you may be wondering, why do we care about that? It's a question that seems to be one that is being done without a lot of knowledge of the science, and it could be more politically driven than anything else. But to put it in context, over 50 years ago, there were some 10 million breeding pairs of pintails on the breeding grounds. Today, it hovers between, I think the low was 1.7 and the high in recent years is around 3 million. So let's just say they're in the low 2 million range. So the population is down by 80% from where it was 50 plus years ago. The pintail season in many places has been restricted, particularly in recent years. The limits have been won due to the population decline. And all of a sudden, the Fish and Wildlife Service says, no, I think we ought to shoot three pintail, even though we have far fewer pintail than we used to. The biological rationale for this, which may be correct, is that we have a terrible imbalance between female pintail hens and drake pintail, and as a result, there are too many drakes. Hens are dying on the breeding grounds at alarming rates due to predation and agricultural practices and other things that are causing them to lose their nests and be killed on the nests. Avian predation could be a very big one as avian populations continue to increase. But in any event, we have a lot fewer hen pintails than we used to, and therefore the sexual race and ratio imbalance is causing there to be too many drakes, which is also putting stress on hens. Just be like too many men in a bar chasing too few women. It's the same scenario. So the Fish and Wildlife Service is proposing that we up the limit on pintail to three. The problem is, on the prairies in the North Country, you can't tell a drake pintail from a hen pintail until most of those seasons have closed. All the ducks are brown. Manitoba, Saskatchewan, the Dakotas, Montana, early season ducks, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois. Pintails they all look pretty brown. Once we get well into the season, the drake, the bull sprigs begin to be much easier to identify, and hunters who care to can identify, but there is very little chance that a duck hunter in South Dakota or North Dakota or Manitoba or Saskatchewan in September and well into October is going to have any idea if they're shooting a hen or a drake pintail. So a lot more hens are going to be shot. And then as you come further south down the flyway to areas where pintail are abundant, whether it be in California, the Central Valley, or in the Great Salt Lake marshes or Louisiana, you have the issue of dim light early in the mornings. You have the issue of hunters really not being able to identify anything to begin with because they don't spend enough time outdoors. A pintail hen is going to be shot more often than the federal regulators think it's going to be. They have too much confidence in the ability of hunters to identify ducks. And I can tell you from a lifetime of experience, even hunters who want to be able to identify ducks generally aren't that good at it. And that includes the most visible of all birds, drake mallards. Lots and lots of hen mallards are shot by mistake by hunters thinking that they're a hen, at least a drake, at least they know they're a mallard. In the case of a pintail, you're going to shoot hen pintails thinking that they're drakes. You're going to know it's a pintail, and a lot more pintails are going to be killed as a result of this. So it's probably not a good policy. And if you just look at common sense, the population remains in terrible shape. There's very little doubt. I mean, there's very little reason to believe that additional hunting on pintails, additional harvest, is going to help the population. We're not that skilled in the field. And then the seasons are skewed in such a way that in the North Country, you don't know what you're shooting. It's all brown. So the Fish and Wildlife Service has a year. Well, actually, they have 6 months to rethink this. But right now, that's their strategy. And as a lifelong individual who's hunted birds and especially waterfowl and ducks, I can just tell you my personal experience says this is not going to be a good outcome for the pintail. And just the little bit of time I have left, couple minutes. I just want to touch on bears. I'll touch more on it as we go on, but it appears that bears, not only grizzly bears, but black bears in particular, are adapting to the sound of shot. And when they hear a shot being taken, they believe that means that there's going to be a carcass at the other end. The outcome is not good for hunters. There have been increasing numbers of hunters encountering grizzly bears while they are cleaning their kill of elk or deer or whatever it might be. This is a developing story. It's developing over time, but there's no question it's become more dangerous to be in the woods with bears during hunting season. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week with much more on the Great Outdoors Show. I'm going to talk about sodbuster, a term we don't hear much about, but which is going to potentially have a huge detrimental impact to the future of conservation in America. I'm going to talk about botulism and outbreaks which occur in the fall and how we could potentially reduce them. It's just tragic. I'm also going to, if I have the chance, talk a little bit about the Tetons and the glaciers and what's happening there, and then potentially a little bit about tax evasion. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America. 720 WGN. Have a great week in the great outdoors.